simply will not buy the world that the elders have given them. They see too much hypocrisy in it. They see too many things that are wrong with it. And I think that the elders are going to have to realize that they simply can no longer browbeat youth into following its established path.
Sunset Politics fans, we are back with another episode. I'm Story.
I'm Molly, and today we just have a couple of stories to talk about with y'all. But first, Story, how are you doing? How has school been and everything? Fill us in.
Well, my past week has been fun, to say the least. I've basically been doing a job in another city about 2 hours away from where I am. So I've been like driving back and forth like a lot. And today is my free day, and no place I'd rather be than here talking with you about politics.
I could not agree more. My week has been a little crazy as well. But the cherry blossoms are out on my campus, so it's at least nice to walk to class and look at those, even though it's very crowded. And I guess something exciting that happened or is happening this week is I'm getting initiated into a law fraternity that a couple of Supreme Court justices were in. So that's kind of cool. I'm really excited about it.
Which ones?
Phi Alpha Delta.
I mean, like, which Supreme Court justices?
Oh, which Supreme Court justices? Sonia Sotomayor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Elena Kagan. And I can actually look it up. Really sorry, we might have to cut this out. Quick intermission. Famous members. Okay, famous members. Oh, Samuel Alito, Stephen Breyer, apparently Joe Biden, and Bill Clinton. So yeah, kind of exciting.
Yeah, few hits, few misses.
Yeah, right. The Bill Clinton one is very funny to me. Same with the Alito.
Yeah.
But anyways, we have a couple of exciting stories to get into today. Story, do you want to start us off on our first one?
Yeah, so the first one, which is just very funny to me, a bunch of national security documents were leaked by some 21-year-old Air National Guardsman, I think, who was basically trying to prove to all his friends that he had access to classified information. And yeah, so from there we learned like a bunch of stuff, some of which is, you know, crazy, some of which is not really. Some of the big revelations are, a lot of them were about Ukraine, and it basically said that like Ukraine is like sort of like is starting to run out of like ammunition. And they might have some vulnerabilities coming up soon. Some other like big ones were that apparently the Mossad, which is like the Israeli CIA, has been like basically trying to support the protesters against Netanyahu, which we haven't really covered on this show, but it's like it's worth digging into. We're not actually 100% sure if that leak is accurate, but like it was in there. And then the other thing is that the U.S. has apparently been spying on a bunch of its allies, including like South Korea, Ukraine, and I think France, among others, which has sort of been like something that like we didn't publicly do anymore, but like everyone kind of assumed we did, but didn't know for sure. So, yeah. But yeah, the U.S. has like spies everywhere, pretty much. So, yeah.
I think that it's really interesting that this happened because it kind of reminds me of back when the Roe v. Wade reversal opinion draft was leaked, and just like how these documents are supposed to be really top secret, and I don't know, it's just crazy that, you know, you have members of the government and its branches that are just like, oh, let me leak this, I guess. I don't know. It's very strange, especially, I mean, I know we're more focused on the recent, but especially with the draft, because I think they still don't know exactly who leaked that. So I'm surprised that they were able to pinpoint this guy for these the documents that were leaked.
Well, I mean, yeah, the guy basically just did it. I forget like exactly how they got out to the public, but like he initially had like posted them onto this Discord server, which like if you've never heard of Discord, this probably has to it has to seem like really sinister, like a social media app called Discord. It's like yeah, but it's actually it's like a it's a fairly normal app that a lot of people use, mostly like gamers and nerds. I have a Discord account that's pretty active. But yeah, so he posted it to like a small group of like 20 people, and I think like some of them like started circulating it, or maybe he like initially he actually like went further and like posted them publicly after. But I think it was leaked initially in that small group like months ago before it was leaked to the public. So yeah, it's just, and what's also interesting is that there doesn't really seem to be like a political motive for like a lot of leaks in history, like the Pentagon Papers or like Edward Snowden. There was very much like a political, like they wanted to do something by leaking it, whereas this guy seems like he didn't really want to. He just wanted to like, you know, show off to his friends. I mean, we do have like some information about his political leanings, but it doesn't seem like they influenced the leaks that much.
It's definitely like, I don't know. I feel like this is not like necessarily something for our listeners to view or like base your views on or anything, but I know on TikTok, like a lot of people were kind of talking about it and they were just saying it was funny because like, wow, Congress was grilling the CEO of TikTok about like security concerns. Like we had like some other security concerns going on and just different kind of jokes about it. That is one nice thing about the internet is they find a way to make a joke out of everything. But I don't know. I think it's a little scary though to know that I think not trying to justify anything, but I think sometimes obviously like documents or information that's kept secret is obviously for a reason, I guess. So it is a little terrifying to know that it can kind of just be leaked like that. Like if it's not really supposed to be information that the public is going to know or is supposed to know.
Yeah, this is one of the big reasons why people were concerned about the Trump classified documents thing, which we talked about like a lot when it happened back in the summer. Of him basically just taking a bunch of like classified documents or national security documents that may or may not have been classified into like his home for like personal use. So, you know, who knows what could be done with that.
Anything else on this topic that you want to talk about?
I mean, not really. They arrested the guy who was responsible for it. And he is probably going to go to prison for life.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. I wonder like how much of the documents that he got he actually had clearance for. Because I think some of them like he wasn't actually supposed to have, but he was able to get anyway.
Oh wow.
I'm not sure though. I'd have to like verify that. But
if that's true, though, that's wild that he was able to get that far.
Yeah. I feel like there's so much to be said on the topic of transparency, but there are like there are some things that do need to be kept secret.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to Florida?
Yeah, I think you wanted to talk about that, so go ahead and introduce it.
So, something in the news this week with Florida and Governor Ron DeSantis, who, if you don't know, has made it clear that he intends to run for president in 2024.
I don't think he has, actually.
I think there's, like, a lot of speculation is maybe the term I should rather use.
Yeah, I don't think he's officially announced it.
Because of some things. Yeah, he hasn't officially announced it, but there's been lots of, like, speculation just based on, like, a lot of, like, political moves and such.
Yeah.
Like this one that we're about to talk about, which is he signed a measure just hours after the Florida legislature passed it on Thursday. But he actually, I guess, according to NBC, didn't publicly announce that he signed this until after like 11 p.m. that day. But he signed a bill that would ban abortion access in Florida, I believe, after 6 weeks. Yeah, after 6 weeks. And this bill actually does create new exemptions up to 15 weeks, but it doesn't change existing exemptions for life and the health of the mother up to 15 weeks, according to NBC. But I think it's just interesting, like, another political move by DeSantis towards, like, the pro-life, you know, people, the Trump Republicans, whatever you want to say, that if he does end up running for president in 2024, I think will definitely get him a support, a base, like, pro-life base, and, like, will get people to vote for him. Because I think that people don't understand that pro-life versus pro-choice is a really big issue, I think, and will continue to be in the next few presidential elections. I think until Roe v. Wade is, like, codified into law, I don't think that this is going to be an issue that doesn't impact people's decision on who to vote for. And even once it is, I don't think that that will change, really, because I think to a lot of groups, abortion access is, like, a, you know, it's a top priority, whether they're against it or for it. But I just personally just don't think that anybody can tell anybody else what to do with their body. And that's, I think, like, beyond politics. Like, unfortunately, it's been made political, but, you know, really what goes on in people's lives is kind of only their own business. And I just think it's kind of gross, for lack of better terms, that, you know, Governor DeSantis is so proud of. It was called the Heartbeat Protection Act. That's, and he's, like, was tweeting about, like, how proud he is to have signed it. But I think that really, really will hurt more people than it helps, to be honest. But yeah, I'll hand it over to you, Story.
Yeah, I totally agree. We've talked about abortion rights on the show before. I'm very much a pro-choice person also. And I think, like, it's setting up, like, the battle between Trump and DeSantis. Because even though he hasn't, like, officially declared, he's, like, there's been so many, like, indications that he will be, like, he's made a bunch of, like, random digs at Trump. Like, recently when he got indicted, he was like, well, I don't know what it takes, you know, to pay off a porn star or something. And then he said, like, someone asked him, like, in the midterms, like, if he could commit to serving for 4 years as Florida governor. And he was like, I don't know.
Yeah. I just looked it up just to, like, confirm. And, yeah, he hasn't, like, officially announced a bid, but he's, like, been hinting. And I guess last night there was a dinner on Friday for the NRA. And he said, like, this is only the beginning of my fight or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, sorry, continue.
So, yeah, I would be surprised if he didn't announce. He's almost certainly going to. And it's sort of like setting up the battle between, like, him and Trump. And he is, like, the more, like, ideologically committed to, like, the social conservative positions, like, you know, being pro-life, being, you know, anti-gay marriage or trans rights or whatever. I don't know about gay marriage or if he's going to try to do that. But, like, it seems like he's definitely more on that side than Trump, who is. Trump seems like he's basically in it for, like, the money and the power and the ego. You know, I mean, he's not, like, pro-choice or anything, but, like, he's certainly not, like, that's not, like, his priority, whereas that seems like it would be more DeSantis' priority. But, like, Trump seems like he has this, like, massive base of support that will support him no matter what, and DeSantis has, like, sort of the institutional backing of the GOP. So it'll be interesting to see the debates between them and where people end up siding. Yeah. And I think moves like this are, like, definitely, you know, it's not the only reason he's doing it, but it will, like, serve the purpose of, like, you know, saying, hey, I was able to do this in my state, I'll do it, you know, on the federal level too, which I think is pretty scary, personally.
Well, I think, like, one more thing just to add as well is, like, this bill was signed kind of in the midst of what's going on in the Supreme, well, not really in the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court issued, like, a temporary keep in place of, like, federal rules for an abortion drug, like the pill. And so I think it's interesting that this was signed kind of in the midst of also that going on, like, that fight for, like, whether states, I think, and I don't really know enough about it, so I will have to correct this later, but I believe kind of what I've gotten from what I've read is it's kind of a battle over whether, like, the abortion pill should still be allowed, like, federally if, like, certain states have banned.
It's not really about that, actually. It's about, like, the FDA approval of it. Because basically, I wrote an article about this on my Substack. The article isn't really as much about the case as is, like, some issues surrounding the case. But basically, like, the gist of it is that, like, the FDA approved this drug, Mifepristone, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, like, 20 years ago. And it's basically, like, they've, like, basically stood by that ruling, like, ever since. Because it's safe. It's a safe drug. There seems to be no issues with it, at least by the review of the scientists. But one, you know, judge in Texas was like, I think, you know, there's someone you forgot to ask. I think the science doesn't actually support this, even though it doesn't have any qualifications. He still, like, made a ruling that basically said, yeah, this FDA approval that's been, like, you know, held strong for 20 years is actually invalid because I don't think they looked at the science well enough. And then, like, an hour later, another judge in a different state said, actually, you know, I think it is valid, and I want to, like, create a stay of that order, basically saying that the FDA can't, like, stop distributing this drug. And so then the Supreme Court stepped in and basically said, while we wait for, like, the appeals process, the drug is going to remain on the market. And yeah, so the article on my Substack that I wrote about is basically, like, how it seems like it's basically about how the courts have kind of become, like, a political tool, right? It seems like, and that's on, like, both ends. Like, people sort of expect the courts to be, like, a political tool, and the courts themselves are kind of starting to act that way also, right? Like, the judge in Texas, like, his ruling seems, like, ridiculous to me. Like, why would you, as, like, a judge, say that you know better than all of the scientists that have, like, worked on this? It just doesn't make any sense. Like, unless you just are super pro-life and you want to, like, use your office to, like, achieve that. And it seems like people's response to that is, like, well, if the courts are going to act this way, like, I just want, like, people that agree with me on it. So the thing that was really annoying to me was that, like, I had to search, like, long and hard to find, like, the legal arguments in this case, because none of the media was actually talking about the legal arguments. They were just talking about, like, oh, this judge is from Texas. This is from Washington. This is, like, the presidents that appointed them, because it seems like that's what matters to people now. When, like, I don't know, I feel like the law should matter in legal arguments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just unfortunate, because I think that this, like, again, like, this whole pro-life, pro-choice issue is, like, never, ever going to be resolved. Like, you're never going to reach a happy middle ground between them because of, I think, how, I sound so biased when I say this, but pro-life people aren't willing to make any sort of exceptions a lot of the time. And I think that's a huge issue because, again, like we were just talking about, like, at the end of the day, like, it's nobody's business but, like, the person who's, like, dealing with, you know, it. And I feel like, I think it'd be really interesting, like, to have a conversation with, like, you don't have to put this out, you might have to cut this out, but I think, honestly, it'd be interesting to have, like, a episode where we, like, talk to, like, a pro-life and pro-choice person and kind of be like, why is this so, like, especially for the pro-life person, like, can you justify why abortion should not be legal without using religion? Or it's just, like, I don't know, I just would like to know what they have to say, because I think a lot of times, like, people use religion as, like, the only justification for, like, why abortion shouldn't be legal. And I just take a lot of issue with that because our government is supposed to be separate from religion. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a really interesting topic. And I think that, unfortunately, again, that in this country, like, we'll never see a middle ground with the way that things are going and just how much more like, polarized people are becoming. I don't know. I think it's kind of sad that, like, people can't have just, like, empathy for, like, the fact that other people are going through things and maybe don't have the same resources or whatnot, and or just aren't ready to have children. I could just talk about this for a long time, but I will stop, hand it back to you. But yeah.
Yeah. I think Roe v. Wade actually was, or at least could have been, a great middle ground.
Yeah, I agree.
It had, like, you know, exceptions. Like, you could, like, I think it was, you know, first two trimesters, it has to stay legal, but after the third trimester, it's up to the states. You know, I think that's, you know, a good middle ground. You know, third trimester abortions are not common at all. So, you know, if a state wants to, I mean, I guess that's, you know, with exceptions for life of the mother, usually is, I mean, like, that's an appropriate middle ground that could leave, like, both sides, like, satisfied. But yeah, it seems like, you know, largely the right was not really willing to accept that, to accept the, you know, liberty based ruling in Roe v. Wade, which I think is, you know, unfortunate, because I do think it could have been a great middle ground if people were willing to see it as such. Yeah.
I agree completely. That's why I think it's also so much of a loss that it was overturned. Because I genuinely believe that that decision was not based on the U.S. Constitution and the law, but I think it was based on personal politics. And people can say whatever they want, but that's just my personal opinion. Obviously, listeners, you don't have to agree with me, but I genuinely feel like that decision was not necessarily constitutional, in my opinion. I mean, I think Christianity is the only major religion that does not provide exceptions for abortion of any kind. So I think that, and if we look at the court, the majority is Christian. But
yeah,
obviously, I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you can't really mind read the Supreme Court justices, but all I can say is I don't think it's a very good legal ruling. So, you know, fill in, you know, whatever reasoning you want.
Yeah, I just don't think it has any legal basis personally. But again, yeah, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. So if you disagree with me, anybody, I understand. It's just an interesting topic of discussion, I guess.
And if you want to hear more in-depth coverage, we have a couple episodes, like back when the leak happened and back when the actual case happened, of like going deeper into the legal reasoning behind like why Roe v. Wade was overturned and why we don't think it's a very good ruling. So you don't just have to take our words for it right now. What do you think about what do you think the Supreme Court will do when they eventually hear this case in full?
I honestly think that they are going to, like, because you were saying it's about the FDA approval, right? Mm-hmm. I think with the way things are going, my prediction is that they are going to say that they're going to side with the pro-life people, or the people who are anti the FDA approval of it, if that makes sense to say. Yeah, I don't know how to phrase it, but I will be surprised if they don't. But I think that's kind of the direction I can see them heading in. I think they're going to kind of use this probably similar reasoning as with Roe v. Wade, the case that overturned Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, I think.
What do you think?
I think, like, if they do go that way, it'd be more in line with the West Virginia v. EPA decision, which I'm not sure if we ever talked about on this show. But that
I don't
was
think
like
we have.
That was like a pretty bad decision, arguably even worse than the Jackson v. Dobbs one, which is the case that overturned Roe v. Wade. But West Virginia v. EPA was like, there was an EPA like regulation scheme that wasn't even like, it wasn't even like valid anymore because the goals under it had already been met. But basically the Supreme Court said, we're going to overturn this ruling because the Clean Air Act doesn't explicitly authorize this exact, exact thing. Which is sort of like an attack on this idea of Chevron deference, which is like, it comes from a case called like Chevron v. U.S., where basically like executive agencies are supposed to be able to do what they do best. That like, you know, Congress authorizes them to do something and then they can do it. But the Supreme Court has basically said like Congress needs to like explicitly authorize a bunch of things that we wouldn't even expect Congress to know about, right? Because they're not like scientists. And so it basically is overall this attack on like the authority of executive agencies. And this like the Pepperstone case doesn't exactly fall under that. Because it, I mean, it is like sort of doing, I don't think there's much of an argument to be made that Congress didn't authorize the FDA to regulate the drugs. The argument would just be that like they didn't do a good enough job of doing it. Which still like sort of relates to the idea of Chevron deference. Because under like a Chevron system, like you would say, oh, well, the FDA probably knows best here. But it seems like, you know, at least the Texas judge said, well, I don't think the FDA does know best. And so it seems like the Supreme Court has taken some cases that would side with that. I don't think it's like it's called the major questions doctrine. I don't think it's like super valid. I don't think it's like backed up in like anything. It just seems like it's a power grab by the court against executive agencies. So if the Supreme Court does, you know, go the way of siding with the, you know, with the anti-Pepperstone people, I think that's why they would do it. But yeah, I don't know. The Texas judge ruling was, I think, pretty bad. So, you know, there may be a chance that the Supreme Court sides with, you know, with the FDA, but who knows.
What's it called? I just want to make like one last little point on Supreme Court, and it's not really regarding abortion or anything, but it's more just like I think the public's view of the court. I think that a lot of people just have no faith in the court anymore. I mean, it came out I think last week maybe that Justice Thomas had been going on trips that were like funded by a billionaire Republican donor. And there was actually a letter that was written by, I think, like 10, 12-ish Democratic lawmakers to Chief Justice John Roberts that was saying that Justice Thomas needed to be investigated and that his behavior was inconsistent with the ethical standards that American people expect of any person in a public position. And the committee said, quote, from BBC, if the court does not resolve this issue on its own, the committee will consider legislation to resolve it. So this is, you know, again, like another area with the Supreme Court where I think people are kind of just getting done with some of like the, it's kind of becoming political theater in some ways. Cause it's like they just keep making decisions or, you know, acting like I know also Justice Thomas's wife also like was kind of getting some backlash because she tried to convince former White House staff, like under President Trump, to overturn the election in 2020. Like, yeah. He is not somebody who's never heard of a controversy before, for sure. And everybody knows, obviously, about the whole situation as well when Justice Thomas, I think, wasn't it like while he was getting, I forget what the formal term is, but when he was nominated, was it before or during his time on the Supreme Court where there was that whole case against him from, I think her name was Anita Hill?
Yeah, Anita Hill. Yeah. I think that was during the nomination.
Okay, that makes sense.
During the confirmation hearings that came up.
Yeah, but it's just, I don't know. I think it's, how do you feel about that whole, like, the, you know, billionaire Republican donors funding his vacations? Like, what are your thoughts?
I mean, you know, powerful people have powerful friends. It's, you know, not necessarily an issue if you disclose it, but he didn't. So it's, you know, who knows what could have happened because of that. Thomas is, he's a very, like, scandal-ridden man. But, you know, worth knowing, one of the people that was, like, you know, sort of involved in downplaying the Anita Hill thing was Joe Biden, who is the president now. So, you know, who knows if he's had a change of heart since then?
Yeah, exactly. But
it seems like there, you know, there's a chance, I don't want to say a high one, but there is a chance that we see like a push to impeach, Thomas. Because that is something that Congress can do. They can impeach, you know, Supreme Court justices. And I don't believe it's ever happened in U.S. history. I think it's happened with a couple like federal judges, but not Supreme Court justices. That would be like a huge, like, you know, break in norms, you know, with the court.
I think this kind of goes back to what you were talking about with the leaked documents. It's just, again, the whole issue of, like, transparency. And I think it's interesting. I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up as well, because I feel like it kind of related to what we were talking about. But
yeah,
there was, I don't know. I just think it's made a lot of people, including myself, honestly, like, just kind of feel like, you know, the Supreme Court is supposed to be separate from politics, but I feel like a lot of times, I mean, you said it, you know, you can't obviously, like, know what's going on in their heads, but I think to a lot of people, I think it can appear as if they're just like, oh, I'm just gonna do what these powerful friends of mine would want me to do because they're letting me go on these vacations. I mean, it said that the guy, his name's Harlan Crow, was just, you know, letting Justice Thomas take his yacht out and his private planes out, so just interesting.
Yeah, there's another thing with Alito a few years ago, I think, of basically he leaked, like, the draft of the Hobby Lobby case to this, like, you know, like, pro-life activist group that had basically, like, this, like, family had, like, become friends with him in, like, an effort to, like, try and convince him to be, like, more, you know, pro-choice, or sorry, pro-life. And eventually, like, he, like, I don't think it's confirmed, but, like, I think he denies it, but I think the person involved in the group actually, like, had a change of heart, and he's now pro-choice, and he, like, basically said, yeah, like, we, you know, had this plan to become super close friends with Alito, and eventually, like, he gave us this draft opinion before it was supposed to come out. Not the Dobbs one. It was, like, a Hobby Lobby case from years ago. But yeah, it's a worrying world when, you know, justices on the highest court in the land, you know, are making decisions that may or may not be, like, influenced by money, right? You know, paying off a congressman is one thing, paying off a Supreme Court justice is another thing, right? We expect, you know, judges to be unbiased. You don't necessarily expect the same thing of congressmen. But yeah. Oh, another thing I was gonna bring up. I love Justice Sotomayor so much. She basically predicted this whole thing in the oral arguments in Dobbs. She said, you know, can the court survive the stench of overturning a case like Roe v. Wade? And I think the answer is, you know, leaning towards no. It really does seem like people are starting to lose faith in the Supreme Court. Where it's just, it seems like, you know, so many people are campaigning on, like, we're going to get as many people who agree with us in the Supreme Court. We're going to try and influence these justices to do the things that we want. No one even, like, talks about, like, legal arguments anymore. Like, the big, like, legal theory on, you know, that's growing in popularity in the Republican Party is this thing called common good constitutionalism, which is about, like ignoring principles of law and, like, trying to bring everything in line with, like, natural law, which basically just means, like, conservatism. It's a worrying world. My Substack article about the abortion pill case is, you know, I think it's pretty good. So go to, you know, storyarnie.substack.com and read it. It sort of, you know, expresses all of my thoughts in writing. Anything else?
I don't think so. Well, it looks like that is all we have for you all today, but there have obviously been some bigger things that are kind of starting to roll out and happen this week, so we will definitely have a little bit more in-depth episode, I think, in the next week or two. I know there's been some things happening in Sudan, and I believe there's also a court case happening with Fox News that I think definitely needs some more time to be covered, but yeah, we'll have those things in store for you all next time. But yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for tuning in. And on that note, sunset out.